All right, we're live. All right, everyone, thanks for tuning in today. We're doing Hell Yes with Kyle Beauchamp from Halo Integration. Kyle's got a fascinating story of entrepreneurship and some of the stories to tell. We caught up at OpTech, introduction from a mutual friend of ours, Scott Casey, and had a chance to chat through, and I was just thrilled with the conversation, super inspired by Kyle's journey and the things that he's accomplished in his life. Just please promise you tell them that the car wash story and running car washes growing up. I love that. And then, and Halo Integration is digital infrastructure for prop tech. They are kind of an all-in-one solution to help you get up and running. And as we all know today, without that digital integration, without that physical infrastructure, it is very hard to deliver the resident experience that's expected today. Kyle, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. How did you end up in this role? You're the CEO of Halo Tech, right? Yes.
Yeah, president, but you know, it's kind of hand in hand nowadays.
Yeah, fair enough. Tell me a bit about your background, how you ended up in that role.
Yeah, so, I was fortunate enough to be born and raised here in Texas. I've spent most of my life here until graduating years and traveled up and down the East Coast, working in a variety of areas. I spent about a decade and a half, almost two decades in the automotive industry, specifically on kind of frontline analytics and procurement and some other areas of that. But I had a long history associated to some of the previous companies in the prop tech realm, specifically in the hospitality side. And when I came back to Texas about 10 years ago, had the opportunity to go in with one of the larger companies at that time, specifically on the in-room entertainment. And we quickly learned and recognized, you know, the ability to expand our services into other technology verticals inside of that industry, as well as additional verticals outside of hospitality. And I was, again, fortunate enough to launch a division inside of that company focused on connected applications with things like surveillance and access control, but with our primary being low voltage infrastructure. So that kind of evolved over time. And as we began to kind of expand and that company began to grow, we had an opportunity with some key individuals to kind of step out and create something independently on our own. And to your point earlier, we recognize a pretty extensive gap in the market for where things had been for decades to where they are to now. You know, more often than not, everybody wants to have the, what we call maybe that sexy technology. They want the IoT connections. They want the robust Wi-Fi solutions. They want smart applications and smart thermostats and phone access into the rooms and all kinds of great things, much less in a luxury style hotel where they may want automation to lighting and to doors and to anything that you need. But the infrastructure piece was often overlooked. It was very dominated by general contractors and electricians that just didn't necessarily care about what they were doing, or what we often called, you know, trunk slammers or mom and pop shops that came out, had a job to do, and once their job was done, they got to walk off. We're not built that way. The industry shouldn't be built that way. Hence why we do focus on turnkey, because we don't get to leave once we're done doing a low voltage install. We're there for the long haul. And that's why we back our projects with a 35-year warranty on our cabling and all of our labor by at least a year.
So how did you get, so the premise of the podcast for everyone again, or for the LinkedIn Live, is talking about getting to Hell Yes, right? And one of the things that struck me in our conversation is that you have a lifetime. You've been selling, you've been on an entrepreneurial role your whole life. And even when you're younger. And we talk about going to Hell Yes, it's having an intuition around a buyer with needs, right? And not just a buyer that's like we're kind of moving away from a world of persuasion and into kind of satisfying pre-existing needs and understanding kind of like the problem that you solve. And they might not know how you solve it. They may, you know, like you said, they may be trying to buy smart access, but don't have the infrastructure in place. But they're kind of looking for alternatives to lay out this roadmap. Your role, and even in your history, right, of experiences, like, what is your, you know, I'll say for today, who's your Hell Yes buyer right now for Halo? And then thinking back of your experiences, what frames that Hell Yes buyer, and kind of what are you looking for? Like, what are you tuning in on to know this one's Hell Yes, this one's still just shopping around?
Right. No, and I think you hit the nail on the head. There's definitely been a pretty strong shift in that kind of that old school sales mentality of, you know, kind of wheeling and dealing to try to figure out what it is to influence the decision, rather than being an asset to that customer or end user. And by just being an information highway, making sure that you're educated, you're staying in touch with what's going on. But from a target, you know, from our Hell Yes buyer is typically in the world of Halo and in previous roles, our their REIT executives, their higher level operations managers, their management companies, you know, people who know that their current infrastructure is holding them back, or at least is on the cusp of understanding, hey, I know what my endpoints are. How do I get to those endpoints properly and make sure they stay online and connected? So they're typically actively prioritizing the solution associated to some of those services, and whether it's upgrading an outdated system, improving tenant satisfaction, or scaling their level of operations. So we know how to solve those problems through infrastructure, through strategic partnerships, through additional technologies, while we keep a really strong focus on openness to their initiatives, and make sure that everything that we're pushing is an ROI-driven solution.
So you guys can solve a lot of problems, right? But when it comes down to head to head, what are you guys structuring your kind of, we're the world's best solving this one problem? What's that look like?
Yeah, so typically that is geared towards the infrastructure, right? And because people find their problems, unless a cable's cut, they don't find their problems in the infrastructure. They find their problems in the endpoint. Hey, my Wi-Fi is not strong enough, or I want to do, you know, something different, and I don't know how to get there. And what we're asking, hey, yeah, we'll get a phone call from an owner and say, hey, I need you to come in and throw 5 more access points because we just don't, our Wi-Fi is not good enough. Well, what's the goal with your Wi-Fi? Are you trying to increase guest connectivity? Is it in the unit? Is it in the common space? What do you have in place today? So we kind of walk them through that. But I would say the piece that really, beyond the fact that we are infrastructure focused first, mm-hmm. and that we can walk into a retrofit environment with some solutions that dramatically reduce the cost of doing business, dramatically reduce the cuts and work that maybe you have to done to get into attics and to get into spaces. So we have some unique approaches on how we deploy solutions in existing environments, which is not very common with a lot of the people in this industry. We are typically turnkey or consultative in our approach.
Yeah.
We're saying, hey, we understand that if we bring a fiber line from this closet to this closet, it's going to touch a lot more things than just your access point. So what are you doing for your back-end cybersecurity? How is your PMS system integrated? How do you integrate with your residents and communication for monthly billing? Do you have a landing page? So spending a decade having multiple people on our team that have a variety of experience and subject matter expertise, we can get on the phone with our clients or potential clients and really work through a set of all their problems. And some of the problems they don't even knew existed until they get on the phone with us. And our objective is not to pull out the problems, is to find the most direct approach to the solution that they need and not give them the runaround and say, hey, listen, at the end of the day, this is how we're going to recommend doing it. And if you need additional services or approaches to how it is, let us introduce you to these people, or let us bring in this approach as well. And so most of that stuff always, you know, is always backed by some type of survey or documentation, but that's typically how we get to that level.
And given its infrastructure, is it a building by building conversation?
No, traditionally it needs to start with what we may call a DMARC point. Like, where is it all kind of going to, and what's the overall objective? However, to your question, it always ends up going in building to building. How are you uplinked? Because one of the most cost-effective approaches that you can take is a point-to-point solution, which is a wireless solution that you're trying to take a signal from one area, one building to another building, like in a garden-style property. That's, you know, pretty common.
Sure.
There's a lot of things that can happen in that type of environment, really, whether it's, you know, physical obstruction, it's weather-related, it could be a variety of things. So again, going back to our approaches to retrofit, we can come in with some unique solutions where we can even etch into the concrete and lay fiber directly into the concrete that you can drive and walk over to uplink buildings. Because now you're giving true symmetrical capability to these units. You may tell a resident, oh, you've got a gig of fiber. Well, you may have burstable capabilities. but it's not going to happen over a point to point. Once we get a fiber uplink in place, we get data directly from your closet to your unit, then you've got full speeds that you need to be able to, you know, if you're working from home or streaming or you're a high profile gamer, whatever it may be.
Did you, when you did the taking a look at who you're selling to, like, I like how you kind of framed this at the very beginning. What's the goal they're looking to solve for? Like, what is the, your prospect, you're talking to them, and you've talked a lot about how you implement it all and kind of the results of the implementation. But when they're looking to solve for something, what are they blocked by? What are they trying to achieve? They go, you know, shit, we've got to upgrade our infrastructure and right. Let's go figure what that looks like. What are they trying to, yeah, what's their goal?
You know, before I kind of get into the goal, I think it's really, there's really two things here that are, well, at least one of them has been a shift, right? It's no longer connected services or no longer an amenity. It's no longer a nice thing to have. It's a must have. And if you don't have it, they're going to go somewhere else and get it. Mm-hmm. You know, so we really try to help eliminate efficiencies and outdated systems through, you know, that prevent properties from delivering modern or connected experiences so that our buyers are saying, hell yes, right? Mm-hmm. They've already identified these issues as critical. They're seeking an alternative on what needs to happen. And typically that's geared around structured cabling, but quickly falls in to the pieces that increase that resident satisfaction or increase, you know, their ability to sell a unit through access control, surveillance, IoT technologies. And so we provide clarity, a single point of accountability, and which makes just their day-to-day easier. They pick up the phone, they got one phone call to make, one email to send, you know, yeah. For lack of better terms, one throat to choke or one back to pat.
And do they often have like existing infrastructure? Like, is it, I totally get it in terms of like the case where I've got no infrastructure. This is like, it's like having no plumbing. Like, you're not in business right. If you don't have any plumbing. Right. And so if I've got an existing infrastructure, when do I say to myself, we've got to upgrade?
Yeah. So technology moves quickly.
What's that?
So technology moves quickly, right? Sure. And infrastructure has not necessarily moved as fast as the technology is. And I'm sure that's not a surprise for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you go into a property built greater than 10 years ago, which is a really dominant percentage of what's out there today, yeah. You're going to have antiquated infrastructure. You may have some Cat 5 in place, but it's typically servicing, you know, access points at best, but you don't have IPTV solutions. You don't have, you know, centralized hubs or even media panels going into a unit that distribute throughout the room. Because when a resident comes in today, your typical age group of a resident comes in today, they're bringing in smart applications. They're not calling DirecTV or Time Warner to get cable unless they necessarily have to. They're streaming. They've got a smart TV. They've got some type of gaming system or a high output computer. Everything is connected and relied upon internet. So the best way to deliver that is through that fully connected solution, hardline solution, till you get to a point where Wi-Fi or wireless is robust enough to handle whatever that quantity of devices is on a property.
It brings up a question, like how many devices are typically in the average unit? Like let's say kind of classic two bedroom. Like, I mean, I looked at, I was changing out our router and I was looking at like just the devices that were connected. And we had like 85 devices connected in my house. Yeah. And some of them were like, some are old MAC addresses. Like I'm not running 85 all the time, but right. it didn't, when I started looking at the numbers, it didn't seem unreasonable. Like the doorbell, the lights on the outside, like just iPhones and shit like that. Like,
right.
I was kind of like surprised at how did I get to 80 devices that are 80 MAC addresses on our centralized router? Right.
Right. Right.
My house. Like, what's it like? Like, what's it like for the average unit? How many devices are there?
Because
like,
you mentioned it's been a pretty dramatic shift over the past 7 to 8 years too, right? I mean, yeah. it was at a point, you know, 7+ years ago where, you know, you're thinking maybe 5 connected devices per unit. Now you're like 15 devices per resident.
Right? Sure.
So, and to your point, a lot of those devices are, you know, some things that require very little bandwidth or they're caching information and they, you know, they do certain things at night or whatever it might be, but you know, doorbells, Apple watches, things like that. But I mean, even if you take a typical hotel environment, which is going to be a much more reduced kind of idea of what that is, somebody sitting in that room with a tablet, their laptop, their iPhone, they're streaming Netflix, and that's one person in a temporary solution. Now you take a permanent solution, there's a good thing their Xbox or PlayStation is running in the background. Their roommates are doing the same thing. Their guests are doing the same thing. So everything is on there. I would tell you it's probably, it's not an understatement or under evaluation to say they've got 15 to 25 devices per unit that have requiring some kind of internet with thermostats, links, leak sensors, doorbell.
It adds up so fast. Like it's even remarkable.
My dog has a wireless collar. You know, it's, it's crazy. So yeah.
It adds up so fast. I mean, like when you look at the, I think it was maybe 7 or 8 years ago when the WWW consortium got together and they started introducing the, I might get this wrong, but like IP addresses were originally 5 segments and now they're going to 7 or 9. I can't remember.
Right.
Extending the IP segments by a whole other numbering range just because we're running out of numbering segments.
Right.
It's because of the amount of IP addresses.
I think there's like 5 of them now. There's one when I was growing up.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. So
here's a kind of a personal example for this. You know, with my kids, if you haven't heard, you know, Texas had a pretty strong bad freeze a couple years ago that shut down our power system. And we were out of power for about 6 days in the middle of the winter, which in all reality in Texas, that's about as long as winter lasts anyway. And my family and I are curled up under blankets, sitting around candles, you know, playing games and talking to each other. But the fact that there was no network connection, we couldn't work. Our kids couldn't go to school. They couldn't communicate with their friends. It was like going back to our childhood, you know, and it was they didn't know what to do. The first time my kids ever saw a commercial, they were, you know, 8, 9 years old watching the Super Bowl with me because, again, it's completely different now. Everything they do is streaming based. And even our house, we cut the cable, I kind of guess is the common term, but we've been full IP for 15 years.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is funny. Like even like when you go through an application, you got to put your residential phone number. You're like,
what is that?
Mandatory? Exactly. Yeah.
You're right.
I mean, when you look at just the way we're consuming things, it is all IP based.
Yeah. I mean, look at your GPS system. Like I can't even go to the store up the street that I've been to 100 times without turning it on. And I know I can do it. We did it all growing up. We never had a GPS system until I was in my 30s. I don't think I had one.
So then if I kind of play it back, the goal that your buyer is looking to achieve is they want to either get the standard or enable, you know, get the standard, enable residents or enable operations, I gather, right? Like, because off being the access points, all those things you just talked about.
Right. Well, the good thing too is in the recent advancements in infrastructure technology, specifically as we go into Cat 6 or Cat 6E or whatever that may be, its capabilities are very, very robust. So we're going to have a pretty big time frame in technology where what we have today is going to be able to achieve whatever is going to need as technology continues to transition. The evolutions of Wi-Fi 6 and Wi-Fi 7, that's also a big piece in terms of wireless communication and allowing, you know, all of these up and downs coming in from, you know, requests to the internet to happen simultaneously. So, that the key behind all of that obviously is giving them an infrastructure that has a life cycle that's going to far exceed that endpoint technology. Mm-hmm. That way, again, it's a tangible asset. It actually has value to them in case they ever decide they want to sell it.
So with respect to like the budget holder, when you take a look at owner versus operator or owner operators, like who's the budget holder for your solution?
I would say at the end of the day, it's always going to end up falling on ownership, whether there's a middleman, you know, with a management company or even a property-based general manager that has influence. You know, they're not all the same. I think in a perfect world, you want to start with the owner developer. They typically are very tech focused and understanding what they need to do. So I think bridging that gap in communication is a little bit easier. Your property managers, you're more solving problems for them, right? Your operations people, you're solving problems for them. What problems are you facing? And then through you know, additional research or even surveys, you're trying to mitigate and actually find out specifically what those problems are. Yep. And more often than not, infrastructure is the key component behind that, or even slight shifts in it to try to get existing systems back in line for what they need.
So let's, so if I take that kind of imagine, you've got like five prospects in front of you. You can only chase one. I mean, just for example, one's got a portfolio of garden style. One's got a portfolio of A's. One's got a portfolio of B's and C's. One's got mid-rise, high-rise, whatever. Who do you choose? Like, you can only talk to one. Who are you going to talk to?
I would say we're probably not fully at the upper tier, but just slightly below that. Typically, you know, when you've got your kind of lower efficiency type of places, they are extremely budget conscious. Mm-hmm. They will take any route possible, if that's even going and buying something off the shelf from Costco or Sam's Club to try to get the things that they need to protect their asset.
Yeah.
Where on the opposite side, they're really trying to figure out a way of how do we bring in more residents? How do we keep our occupation levels at max? What are the pieces that we need to ensure a resident satisfaction stays high? Mm-hmm. But it also creates a lot of visibility and communication to protect themselves with their property and with their residents, right? So whether that's, you know, PMS integration into the wireless system so that they can activate Wi-Fi. I can tell you this, you know, one of the hard, it used to be one of the hardest things in multifamily for a property manager was to collect rent, right? Or mm-hmm. collect back billing. Right. And you could threaten, you could put notes on their door. Heck, you could even change the locks somehow, some way. They just don't seem to bother with it. You cut their Wi-Fi off, you're going to see
them. Yeah. Things happen for sure. Do you actually, it's a good segue. Like, so like when you think about what's happening right now with all the A's, like the A's are getting built up. They're coming on supply and, you know, practically all supply is, and naturally all new supply is new and it's going to have all the infrastructure in it already. You know, I would imagine. So you're seeing people move from C to B and B to C, or C to B and then B to A, because the compression of rents. Do you see like a case where like people are leaving homes, like leaving, they're leaving because their Wi-Fi isn't, like that would be the principal, you know, I'm changing apartments because the Wi-Fi sucks in this one.
Yeah. It does happen.
Yeah.
Typically it's more of a kind of a more than one item, but it's generally specific to some level of connectivity. Hey, I can't get it. My door never works and the Wi-Fi is garbage and the TV solution that I'm supposed to be streaming with whoever it may be doesn't work because your network connectivity is not strong enough to handle it. What's a big catalyst to making that switch easy for that resident is that the neighboring properties got a big giant banner out talking about how strong their connectivity is, free sure. Wi-Fi, whatever it may be. It's a combination of both, but yeah, it is a driver. It absolutely is a massive driver in, of course, resident satisfaction. I've never seen the numbers in terms of, you know, how many contracts are broken associated to it, but I can imagine it's considering how important it is going in and selecting a property. I can imagine it has an impact on going out as well.
I mean, my personal experience, like if I've gone to a hotel multiple times and the Wi-Fi is terrible, I won't go back.
Right.
You know, so and a lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now in multifamily is, you know, born from hospitality experiences. It's just more frequency, there's more data. Right. Like I will not choose a place if the Wi-Fi is terrible.
Right. Your geographic location, you may need to kind of think outside that realm, specifically around cellular boosting. I mean, you know, especially for government related people, you know, the most secure environment for them is going to be on that. If they're not bringing in some kind of private VPN network, or they've already got some kind of communication or deal in place with the property to kind of have their private network. So, you know, and it's hard sometimes with some of these cell signals to penetrate through some of this stuff. So there's an added layer to that, whether it's redundancy or even in some cases, you know, in remote areas, it could be a primary. But yeah, we definitely believe trying to kind of to deliver on a connection from the time you wake up to the time you get in your car and you drive out that gate, you are connected. Right.
Yeah.
And then you could add some visibility and some back end tools to the property to kind of know what's going on, there's a lot of promotional opportunities there. If you have some geofencing kind of things in place with your network where, you know, hey, anytime one of my residents walks by the pool this Saturday, let's shoot them an email and say, hey, or text message and say, hey, reminder, rent's due tomorrow. Or, really? Hey, join us next Saturday for a community event. So there's a lot, there's really a lot of things that can be done when your connectivity is robust, you've got the back-end tools and the right company in place. But again, always dependent upon proper infrastructure being there.
Got it. So I'll just kind of, I'll summarize what I've heard so far. So you like buyers that are, I mean, the owner is ultimately writing the check, right? You can have an influencer from an operator, maybe not. So your first conversation might be with an operator, or maybe you get recurring business with an operator that's positioning, or a manager that's positioning back to their owner, the ownership group. You'd like kind of like, I'll say B's and C's, because the retro, they're suffering from the pain more than the people who are selling the A's. Are you guys best in the world at retros? Or, I mean, I know you're going to say yes to both, but like, what deal goes faster, a retro deal or a new install deal?
Yeah, a new construction ground up is always going to be the best and easiest approach. You're not obstructed by what's already in place today. Retros can be very challenging, but with some of the unique retrofit approaches we have, we can get away. But there is a bit of a sacrifice. I think you have to figure out what your balance is. It's like, hey, do you want hundreds of access panels to be installed so that we can find a cable pathway and run to traditional cable? Or are you willing to spend just a little bit more money to keep your aesthetic in place and we can come to you with this retrofit solution? Or you've gone through something where you just, there's no way that you can get a cable from this building to that building. Yeah. And then we walk in with some kind of, you know, hydro excavation or like I mentioned before, laying fiber directly in the concrete.
It's interesting if you ever get a chance to go to Europe and you kind of like see how they've retrofitted the hotels or apartments there. Like, you've got cement walls there, right? So it's really painful to kind of try and retrofit. So you look at even like a hotel room where they've kind of moved plugs around, because you know, it used to be there's just like, I don't know, let's say five plugs in a hotel room, but now and nothing near the bedroom and no light up above, and so now they've kind of retrofitted those, and you just see the snake lines of where the wire would go and how it's been snaked all around, or maybe exactly, they put a new base. They put in new baseboards and everything's like shuttled in behind a baseboard.
It's interesting. Or they've got some kind of plastic molding and you clearly know what's going on. You know, so there are some new technologies out there like G.HN that's really great. They can utilize older coax or even twisted Paracat 3 infrastructure to deliver on massive gigabit capabilities and get the same solution and not do that stuff. You know, we had a pretty decent run for a while there historic style hotels, historic style properties that needed the same level of connectivity, but you don't want to be drilling into those walls. You don't want to, you know, try to penetrate through what we'll call a firewall, but in theory, it's just, you know, double stacked concrete, right? So it's kind of sometimes it may be a pick your battle here. What do you want to do? Is it an aesthetic thing or is it a cost of doing business? And whichever it is, we can find a custom and tailor fit solution to fit those needs. But you've got to remain flexible. Very often or not, people go up and say, look, all we do is Cat 6 and fiber or combination of one. But to be able to kind of do everything and make sure it's right fit for the customer, it takes a lot of continuous training on our end. Our operations teams and designing teams need to stay, you know, really in touch with everything that's going on. Monthly trainings to make sure that they can stay up with the technology and know when to shift and where to shift when the time's needed.
When someone's kind of when one of your buyers is looking to solve the problem, like they want to enhance their resident experience, or they've got a table stakes. We have a bad connectivity experience out there. What are they typing into Google? Like, what's their first step of their journey? Well, they're like, is it my building is slow? Like, what are they typing in to figure out? And where do you, you know? And how do they ultimately find, like? Yeah, what are they trying to figure out?
Yeah, I think these buyers are kind of often considering managing some of these projects in-house or hiring multiple vendors, one to do this, one to do that, right? And that can often lead to kind of fragmented delays and just massive interruptions in the deployment process. But their typical searches can consist of things like best integrated access control and surveillance system. And then they're getting manufactured-based information. Oh, this is the best physical piece of hardware, but not necessarily how does that function in their environment. Or they're searching, you know, structured cabling companies near me, right? Now as a company like ourselves, you're fighting for Google positioning on advertising, right? Or how to upgrade my property technology, right? That's a really common one. How do I get better Wi-Fi? You know, these searches very often, they reflect their need for like a comprehensive, streamlined approach, even if they're not fully aware of how they can solve their problems yet. But that kind of those search bases will tell you a story and have told us a story of where these buyers are typically looking to find that information. Hence, our desire and objective of presenting somewhat of a turnkey solution, either with our solution, our technology solutions, and or our partners, we could believe we can paint that entire picture.
So when they get that they type in that Google search, and that's a great example, right? How do I upgrade my technology infrastructure? Or in multifamily or whatever.
Right.
Like, what are the kind of choices that come up to them? Like, not so much like who you directly compete with, but like their problem is, I want to upgrade my technology infrastructure. And they're going to have like three choices, right? And then one of them would be your category of solution. What are the three choices? Like, what are the things that come up to them that they have to evaluate before they kind of land on your category?
Yeah. So, you know, that's a really great question. And I think I'm still navigating what it is that we need to do to better position ourselves in those type of searches. But typically what comes up in that area is you're going to get, you know, your first few AI level responses and those top kind of people that are paying massive amounts on advertising to get you up front. Then you're going to get hit with some of the real kind of the manufacturing based leaders, right? What that technology is. So, you know, if you're searching for infrastructure, you're going to get Corning's going to pop up and so forth and so on. So they've got to spend some time going page to page to actually try to find, okay, where is it the people that actually deploy these solutions? How do I know what the strategic effort is to make these things happen? Yep. That typically is more comes about when they start to say, okay, who are the top integrators in this? Once they learn a little bit from that search, who are the top integrators to do X, Y, and Z?
If I think through, they've kind of like, they've gone through a little bit, but they're not going to start looking for an integrator or an implementer until they've actually kind of built out their project plan and said, okay, I need to upgrade our technology infrastructure, you know, because it's affecting rent, or it's affecting resident experience, or usually it's probably rent or just operations. And then it's going to be, okay, here's our project plan. We need to upgrade this and that. Now who's going to do it? Like maybe, and they often chosen the manufacturer before they talk to you.
Yeah. And so that's also why it's important for companies like ourselves to have a really strong partnership with the people that are responsible for manufacturing this stuff. And we do. One of our favorites is OCC, Optical mm-hmm. Cable Corporation out of North Carolina. They are very in tune with their client and they manufacture a cable, both fiber and Cat 6, that is amazing at a very great price point. You want to get connected with these people. You want to make sure that you're developing your relationships with them, because again, that's where you're sourcing your materials. If things sure. fail, that's where you go back to. But to the point of this question, very often or not, that's where the research is going to lead these people, and they're going to have a conversation and with said yeah. company, Corning OCC, and they're going to say, here are our top five people in a country or in your area, whatever it may be. You want to be part of those conversations and make sure you're keeping those relationships up.
So that when it comes down to those five or four that you're competing against within your category, and let's exclude price. Let's assume everyone's competing at the same price. How do you guys position yourself as being different?
It's the consultative and turnkey approach. But in reality, what it is for us is we're very honest and transparent with what needs to be done. We yeah. make recommendations in areas that are going to affect the work that we're going to perform or want to perform, and what that mm-hmm. means for other vendors. We take a conscious effort to develop a real relationship and honestly listen to what their problems are, help them solve those issues through whatever that may be. If that's a handoff to a company that we think can do it better, or to what we believe is the right approach from an infrastructure standpoint. So it's really giving them that trust and transparency. And listen, at the bottom line is there's going to be mistakes in a deployment, right? There, it's not cookie cutter. The problem that we often see is these companies tell these people, oh, man, we are perfect. Nothing's going to go wrong. And then they fight with them every time there is. We're not that way. We know there's going to be problems.
Right? So do you guys have like design engineers that are part of the sales organization?
We do. Right. And so that kind of leads into the same scenario, because when we know there's going to be issues, right, mm-hmm. what we can guarantee is that we're going to fix them. Very often or not, it's things that you just can't help. Right. Somebody, they decided to run a new sprinkler line and they cut the line. Right. That's kind of what it is. But yeah, so our design engineers, they take all of that into account during the process. But the way I believe that all of us are, and I don't care if you're an accountant, you're an administrator, you're a project manager, you're a design engineer, you know, whatever it may be, everybody's in sales. You're either selling yourself, you're selling
your product,
you're doing something. So we want them to have that mentality so that when they're talking to our customers, because it's going to happen, they're talking to our guys in the field, we all have the same goals in mind. They can hop on a call and explain things to our clients that maybe is way above my head or even some of our other colleagues' heads that we just can't handle. So it's important that we kind of create those relationships and those dialogues both internally so that they bleed out externally to our client base.
So they play it back. So your differentiator is the consultative event. So your hell yes buyer is, and again, I'll kind of like keep adding on. This is like a campfire game, but like they're building B's and C's. So you'd love a new build and they're building a B and C space. They've got to do the new stuff in there. You're in there before the building is presumably being built, and they have a gap and they actually don't know how to do the technical infrastructure. So they're not experts in technical infrastructure. So maybe they're not even like, I mean, if you're building, 20,000 units a year, you probably have on-site staff. Maybe, but if you're building 1,000 units a year, maybe that's something you rely on folks like yourself for. So that's a gap in your organization that you choosing, like I'm getting at is that if I have a gap and you're the expert in it, and I'm choosing you versus the competitors out there, I'm choosing you because you close a gap that I have, that I naturally have. And so I don't know how to install this stuff. I don't know, you know, where it's going to go. So I'm going to choose Halo because Halo is going to offer that as a differentiated alternative, right?
Right.
And so then in terms of the spirit of getting the hell yes, the questions you can ask are, do you have people on site? Do you have on site or designers within your organization? And if they say no, then you know right away that that's a really good fit for you versus what your competitors have to offer. Is that my understanding correctly?
That's very fair. Yeah. And I think that is exactly what it is. In addition to that, you know, the fact that we are infrastructure focused first, you typically, that's not the case. And we're not going to shove it down your throat, right? We want to make sure it's the right solution for you. And so that's a new approach for a lot of people, because we actually understand how valuable that is to getting to the things that you want to get to.
Yep. So then I'm just kind of going back to like the question I had about the manager versus the owner. Do the owners often have, like in a new build scenario, is there a manager they've already got in mind, or are they like with respect to who's influencing the purchase decision? Like, is it like for your, again, this is again, like the getting to hell yes, like your ideal getting to hell yes buyer. So if it is new construction and there's a consultative piece to it, is it, to me, that would sound like you're just selling directly to the owner versus into a PMC, which gets you to an owner. What is it?
So it's a combination of both. I think you want to start with ownership, but very often or not, the easiest point of entry is through some PMC or general contractor, right?
Mm-hmm. I got you.
But the approach, once you're on the phone or in the face of, is very same. It's very much the same. If you've already done this before, you've established relationship with the owner developer, then when they go to build that next property, they're going to tell their GC, hey, this is our customer, this is our vendor for this area of work. Mm-hmm. Now, it may vary in terms of how you interact financially, whether it's directly with ownership or through the general contractor, depending upon how the funding is set up. But the process to get there is the same. While you're solving all these problems for the residents, you're solving all these problems for the property owners and managers and developers, you are in a new construction environment, you are solving a ton of problems for a general contractor.
Yeah.
Almost every time we talk to a GC, it's the same reaction. Like, oh, wait, you can do all of that?
Nice.
I don't have to hire 9 different companies and manage their schedules and their personalities. I can just deal with one person. You can come out and do that, right? And then remaining flexible. I mean, a lot of this stuff is really, it's a key competency around what the physical technology is. Like take access control, for example, right? There's a key competency around how you deploy and how access control systems work and the variation of in features that come along with it. But there is a massive variety of manufacturers out there. Mm-hmm. And certain areas or sectors of business like education or government, they traditionally only have one or two that they're willing to do. That way there's consistency across the entire environment. So you know, even saying, hey, look, we don't deal with that, but we deal with all of these other things. Is this an alternative option for you? And let's assume they say yes, then great. But if they say no, then say, all right, great, we understand. But what we're willing to do as a commitment to you is go out and get trained. Understand what it is we need to do in that environment. Bring in, at our cost, somebody who's a subject matter expert specific to that, and build and deploy a solution for you so that it meets your standards. That way we can give you, still give you that again, turnkey approach.
So then if I think about it in terms of like the new, so again, I want to make sure I hear you correctly, because the next question is about the time wall. So like the time wall is basically like, what are they forced up against to make a decision rather than just punting it? Like, you know, like, you know how it is, like you can just keep punting things until you can't punt them anymore. And especially like, let's say for right now it's budget season. The people can just make up excuses not to make a decision because it's Thanksgiving and then it's Christmas or it's the holidays or whatever. What's the, for your, you know, if we kind of like focus on, and I recognize that you're going to sell retros and you're going to sell into new construction, right? What's the time wall that forces them into a decision that moves them from a position that they could punt on the decision to like, to where they have to make a decision, I guess. And construction piece is probably obvious, but I'm really curious to hear, when you're selling a reno deal, a retro deal, what's their time wall?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one, it's going to depend upon who you are working with, right? Whether that's, you know, build to rent, owner operator, a REIT, a PMC, you know, those type of people, the structured approach is going to be a bit different. But I guess probably at the end of the day, it's going to come down to budget in most cases. And in theory is, okay, if your objective in a retro and fit environment, if your objective is this corner of the building has got poor Wi-Fi, it's just so bad. All the other areas are kind of okay. You know, when in theory, the right approach is to rip out, replace, go to a certain ratio, make sure that you're providing coverage. You can say, listen, we understand the existing environment. Let's take a step back. Let us come on site. Let's do an Ekahau predictive heat map. Let's figure out where your dead zones are. Let's see if we can do some strategic placement and single runs or single drops to certain areas of the building. Get you a working Wi-Fi system as we work in, or working whatever it may be system specific to connectivity. And then let's work into your, you know, your following year's budget on how we do that. Let's phase the project out.
Like stop the bleeding approach.
Yeah, exactly right. Because you're talking about lost revenue, right? At the end of the day, you're talking about lost revenue. So if it's a 30% loss and for half the price, you can mitigate 25% of it. Sure. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Right. But in theory, are you trying to approach longevity? And you don't want us to continue, or another company to continue to come back out. You want to have the ability to just kind of rip off those access points that are no longer working anymore, or cameras that are no longer working, and put another one right back in place in the proper area, and you never have to worry about it again. That's a larger scale approach in a retrofit environment. So understanding that, you know, it's not about the upgrades, right? Selling them all the leather, sunroof, and all that stuff. It's really about making sure that you sell the right solution to them. And that's contradictory to a lot of what people do. We truly believe what goes around comes around. Our objective is not to win the single project from you, but is to be your trusted advisor on all your projects moving forward. And the only way you do that is by being flexible, being honest, and solving their problems according to their current constraints, whether that is budget or timing or whatever it might be.
Now, do you guys have different playbooks for different buyers?
Sometimes I think we have different playbooks or different design approaches to certain buyers and or environments. Our approach is pretty straightforward. I mean, we try to remain professional and ethical in everything that we do, but we want to be honest and be ourselves. We want people to get to know us. We want to get to know them. And I think we have a deep want to create a relationship for the purposes of our success and theirs. And that tends separate us from everyone else.
What kind of objections do you guys get as you're kind of, you know, because you always kind of get the objections as you kind of close the finish line?
You know, it's typically timing. It's typically price. And there's always the kind of typical responses of, you know, well, what's more important to you? Save a dollar today to lose 10,000 tomorrow or a year from now, whatever it may be. But positioning them in the right solution for the right time is key. Yeah. And so if you've, you know, very often or not, especially with somebody who just doesn't want to deal with it, they'll throw you out an RFP or give you baseline information. So then you come back with a full turnkey proposal and it could be robust. And then you lose them, right?
I find an RFP is like, it's like, let's say they're asking for this, right? But you can deliver this.
Right.
So they ask you 1 to 3, you can deliver, you know, 1 to 7. They don't even know to ask about like 4, 5, 6, and 7.
They typically don't.
And you really want to tell them about how you're the best in the world at 4, 5, 6, and 7, but they haven't even prioritized it as a requirement. Right. So it's like really hard to answer the mail on 1, 2, 3, and then make them aware of how you're different in 4 through 7. And they don't even know to think about it. And so it's almost like you got to answer the mail on 1 to 3, educate on 4 to 7, and figure out a way to pull that through as a differentiator versus just like, you can't not answer it. You can't not, but you've got to somehow link it back to their questions in 1, 2, 3, so that you can tie it all back together to the original objective of increasing revenue. It's all increasing revenue.
And timing is the key there, right? Because if you start hitting them with 5, 6, and 7, when all they care about is 1, 2, 3, you're going to lose them on 1, 2, 3.
They're confused.
Right. I typically and try to teach our team to do this is address their immediate request and or need.
Because that's their pain.
Let them know that there's an exploratory conversation you want to have. And at that moment, say, hey, you know, just to, by the way, the reason we did this is because of this. And we also offer this. Don't worry about retaining it. Let's focus on what we need to focus on today. But I would like to put a call or a meeting on your book for 2 weeks. Does that work for you? And we can explore all this other stuff so that when you get on that call, they've kind of got their head wrapped around their objective by that 1, 2, 3. You don't even need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. You just focus on the other stuff. It helps them categorize things and departmentalize things that it achieves better results for both sides. For both sides.
Yeah, no, definitely. Especially when you're competing on the consultative piece. Because they may be just looking, they may RFP just an infrastructure conversation, but you've got to, you know, you got to nudge in your differentiator in a way that is compelling for them, right?
Yeah, you just got to pay attention to those signals. You know, you got to make sure you're solving the problem of the priority, rather than just consistently focusing on all the alternatives or requesting different site assessments or sharing their frustrations, right? You want to empathize, but you want to help them solve those problems, not be stuck in them and come back with the same limitations that they're already fighting. You're like, I'm on the phone with you. Why are you telling me what my problems are? That's why I called you.
Yeah. We're going to wrap this up real quick. A few more questions left to go. So one piece that you've been selling your whole life, which is, I think it's like, it's thrilling because like you've been implementing change your entire life. What's the one piece of advice you'd give somebody who's out there selling, trying to recognize those key moments when a buyer says hell yes?
So I do believe it is relationship oriented, and it takes a little bit of kind of internal growth to get to what I believe is the right approach. And that's, you've got to be who you are. Mm-hmm. Don't try to manufacture what you think somebody wants you to be. Don't try to manufacture what you've seen around you as success. Take the things that you see successful people do, the people that you see achieve the goals that you want to try to achieve, and apply them to yourself. Continue to grow daily, both ethically and morally. Make sure that you stay aligned with your clients and aligned with yourself. But at the end of the day, be yourself. People want to deal with real people. They don't want to deal with fake people. And you know, fortunately, most of us are really good at picking up on that.
Yep, 100%. Love it. Who should we talk to next?
You know, I thought hard about that question. And I mean, I think in a kind of a general sense, you know, there's property technology providers, there's decision makers, there's multifamily sectors who are really driving innovation in those spaces. I mean, just walk the floor at OpTech like we did. There's plenty of people to talk to. There's a few key companies out there that are, you know, very customer focused, very nimble in their managed services approach and have different approaches to technologies. I'm a huge fan of a company called Sparkplug IP. Their executive leadership is amazing. We've got some great partners and they're really customer focused and really strategic in their technology at Groove and Groove Technologies.
I've heard that.
Yeah, they're fantastic. They're based out of Utah. We love them to death. Really solid team from the top all the way to the bottom. Great communication. I mean, I couldn't say enough great things about them. And then we're huge fans of Blueport Wireless. We like the way they operate. They like to think outside the box and do things that are unique. They're very multifamily focused. They're fantastic people. And I could never say enough good things about Worldview. They're very hospitality focused, but their technology stack is pretty great.
Well, we'll reach out to you, get some intros in that, and we'll see what turns out. How can everyone get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn under Halo, Halo Integration, or directly through my personal page. Our website is halointegration.com. My contact information is right there. Shoot me a message, send me an email. I'll help answer questions. Even, hey, what are we supposed to do? What would you recommend? I know maybe you don't operate this, but is there a company that you know of that's good for it? That's what we're here to do. We're here to help people any way that we can.
Right on. Well, thanks a lot. That's been super interesting. Thanks, Kyle, for all your help today and your input. I think this has been super valuable, specifically from the infrastructure side of things, to get people to listen to kind of how people are making decisions from the capital, I mean, up from the capital side of things, and how it relates to the operating outcome. For everyone listening, if you're on LinkedIn Live, you can follow us a little bit later on the podcast or listen to prior episodes on Getting to Hell Yes on Apple or on Spotify. Kyle, thanks again so much for your input today. I really hope that both the buyers and the sellers out there are listening get a chance to get some insights to why we do what we do and how we get there. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.